You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
It's the Neverland Podcast, episode 93.
Up to Neverland.
Take a star to the right and stay until morning. Neverland.
Good morning, Neverland!
Hello again, it is I, the Spider-Pan Jeremy, your host here in the Neverland Podcast, and I'm by myself today. Heather has been a bit under the weather this week, and she hasn't been able to talk so good, so there will be no Windy Nerd this week. That's okay, you get to have me, and just take that pixie out of your pocket and get your happiest thought. We are flying away to Neverland, and we're going to have some fun today. I have some Disney Parks news. I have a little bit of news to keep you updated with Toonfest on what's going to be happening next weekend for stuff I want you to join me in. Also, we're going to go outside of Disney a little bit and hear from Adrian Paul, who was television's Highlander for many years. He was at the Kansas City Comic Convention, and I did record his panel. Now, there is a bit of a gap in the recording of the panel because I did switch over from my Sony Handycam over to my phone and recorded a special bit of where he had some guests come up and do their own version of the quickening before he gave an example of him doing it himself. And so I actually have released that already on YouTube, so you can see that. But I do have all of his regular panel on a video, and that's actually where I'm going to get this audio. If you would like to see the video, I will be uploading it to the Neverland Podcast YouTube channel this week. In fact, I might try to upload it today, if not tomorrow. So it will be up there, so you will be able to see this as well. Make sure you do visit our website at neverlandpodcast.com and go into the news feed, because we have new articles that are popping up there frequently. I've got some new staff writers, a couple of them, but I'm always looking for more. And also any artists, if you would like to share some of your artwork kind of regularly, stuff like that, you know, send me an email at podcast@neverlandpodcast.com and we will get you set up to share whatever you would like to write, review television shows. You know, I got plenty of room for a lot of people, and we can make this kind of a community website of sharing all kinds of fun fan type of geek stuff and Disney stuff, of course. But let's get rolling, shall we? I do have some Disney park news.
This is Gary Ganoo, and the No Ganoos is Good Ganoo's show. The only TV Ganoos program guaranteed to contain no Ganoos whatsoever.
Neverland News from the Disney Parks.
All right, the first order of news really... that I really have to go over, and a lot of people are really unhappy about this, and you probably heard about this already, but Aladdin is being booted out of the Hyperion Theater in 2016 over at Disney California Adventure. The Aladdin show has been there since 2003. It has been able to keep going because the genie is allowed to improv, and so you always get some different jokes from the genie throughout the show. I have heard audio of the show. It is fantastic. I've never gotten to see it myself, but I have heard how wonderful and how much fun it is. And they even at one point they tried to put Toy Story into that theater, but the fan outcry was so large that they put Aladdin back. Well, January 10th is your last day to see the Aladdin show, because Frozen is moving in. Now, Frozen has already taken over the Royal Theater. I mean, it's a brand new theater they just put in when they put in the new Fantasyland over there. And so it had the Beauty and the Beast show and the Tangled show. Apparently those have not been running. They've only been running a Frozen show. Also, Frozen has kicked the Muppets out of their own theater. And I've been reading through the comments on the Disney Parks blog, and there's people wanting to have, does this mean Muppets 3D is coming back? Is Frozen going to leave that? There hasn't been any announcement that I've heard that Frozen is leaving any of these areas of the park, that it's already taken over. And you could almost taking it as a bit of a sign that over in the Norway Pavilion in Epcot, that they had a little small fire over there during the construction, that this whole thing is going to come burning down on them, I think. They are pushing too much Frozen, and by the time that sequel comes out, I don't know if anyone will be interested anymore. I think they're making us tired of it. I mean, I'm sure there's some diehard fans out there that are still going for it, but, the rest of us are like, well, yeah, I liked that movie, but I've got so much of it, I don't want to sit through it anymore. I don't want to have it everywhere. They are not balancing this very well at all. So this seems like a bad move, in my opinion, and the Disney Parks blog is just full of comments of people saying, please don't do this. So, maybe with enough outcry, Aladdin will come back, just like when Toy Story booted out. I don't know. But here's some other sad news. There's a lot of sad news going on, but this is also the last year for the Osborne Festival of Lights. It's been there for 20 years over in Disney's Hollywood Studios. Is a very cool light show, but here this is bittersweet because they're tearing out that area to build the new Star Wars and Toy Story Land. So, we're getting some really cool stuff for that, so that's still something to be excited about, but it is kind of bittersweet because, that's a really neat show, and it's been a great 20 years, but definitely this is your last chance to go check it out, so make sure you get down there this year around Christmas time and watch. And speaking of holidays, the holiday version of the Haunted Mansion opened up this week, and it looks like everybody's really excited to see what they were going to do with Hatbox Ghost. And I didn't see too much difference from what I could see from little short clips of videos. They didn't do a whole lot different with the Hatbox Ghost. He's still in there, and everybody's still very excited still to have him. But, of course, it's always worth seeing to go check out the holiday version of the Haunted Mansion. It is, of course, decorated and ready to go now during Halloween and throughout Christmas. So definitely go check it out over in Disneyland.
Main Street, Main Street, meet me tonight on Main Street, 'cause we've got a date tonight at 8, so meet me down on Main Street, please don't be late, don't make me wait, just meet me down on Main Street. We'll take a ride on an old horse car, I'll buy you a chocolate bar, and you'll be the sweetest girl by far down on old Main Street. Oh, the fireman's band is gonna play, so meet me down on Main Street. They'll play Tarara Boom Dee, parading down on Main Street. We'll pause a while at the popcorn stand. What an evening, ain't it grand? Our little hometown is a fairyland down on old Main Street. Old Main Street.
Okay, quick announcement here for Toonfest. It is this Saturday, September 19th. So, of course, I'm going to go there, and I'm going to record. I'm going to go and see a panel, maybe two, probably at least, definitely at least one. I will get some video. I'll get some audio. I'll be in there around town most of the day. But here's what I want to do. I have used Meerkat in the past, but I'm going to try out Periscope, which is an official Twitter app for Periscope. And so make sure you're following on Twitter at NeverlandPcast, and make sure you follow on Periscope if you have that app. But from about 10 a.m. on Central Time is when they usually start up the parade, and I'm going to start streaming. I will stream the entire parade, and I'll walk around the street with it, but I'll probably be off and on all day. I don't know how strong the internet's going to be out there in the street. It is a small town, so I'm going to do my best to bring you what I can live, and I'll try to show you Main Street and take you around some of the shops and things like that. It'll be great, but make sure you check it out this Saturday, 10 a.m., Toonfest in Marceline, Missouri, Walt Disney's boyhood home, and I will be, like I said, on Periscope, broadcasting live as best as I can.
To Disney and beyond!
It's time to go in Disney to Disney and beyond, because it is time to hear from Adrian Paul. You might remember him from the Highlander television series, if you watched it. Of course, Highlander was a successful movie series. It's kind of an underground geek thing, you know. Because they made a lot of movies that, you know, they weren't like huge box office things, but it's like a cult hit, you know. And I've mainly just seen the first one. I tried to watch the second one, and they had really changed some things, which I heard they re-edited it, and I never got around to watching it. But I did watch the television show. And this is, of course, what made the famous phrase, "There can be only one." But Adrian Paul was really cool, a lot of fun, and I think you're really going to enjoy this. So here it goes.
I grabbed these anyway. Hold on. Let me destroy the entire beauty that they've made here. Really good, this. It's just kind of like walking around. It's even better with me. There you go. Thanks, sir. That's better. Surely you can hear me way in the back. It's a very big room, this, isn't it? Wow. So you guys Kansas City love you?
Woohoo! Yeah!
And I know these ladies in the front, they'll live all over the place. They follow me everywhere. Yeah, but it's nice to be here. I've never been to Kansas City before, and it's I actually drove in going, wow, no buildings, no cars. It's like really cool. Because trust me, you've got it great here, because you go to Los Angeles or some of these other cities, it's just everybody's on top of it. Everybody, I'm getting so done with that, really. Anyway, Highlander, I guess some of you know. Yeah. You know, most people say, so what have you been doing lately? And I said, well, I've actually done, you know, three films last year, and it's a TV series. I did an episode of Strike Back, which just came out. I've not seen it, but no, great, I loved you in Strike Back. I'm like, really? He said, but I am busy. Highlander was obviously one of the things I did, you know, early in my career, and it was probably the most notable thing that that people remember me for, because it was ran for six seasons, 5 years. It was in 80-90 countries around the world, and it was a big success. So, and I thank you for still being here. Come on in! There's plenty of space. I'm really thankful that people still remember it, because, you know, it's a very long time ago now. I will take questions from you. We can give there's no mic, but you can probably shout out. I will take questions from you in a second. I just wanted to sort of say, I'll answer almost anything. Almost anything. And if I do this, it means I'm not answering it. There are a lot of stories that Highlander, as I said, we did 117, I personally did 117 episodes. So there are a lot of stories, a lot of things that happened with the sword fights and the accidents and the history and the love affairs and all that stuff. And people always said to me, so why was Highlander such a big success? And for me, and I don't know if any of you, who saw the first film? None of you. Okay. from that first film, I got a real spirituality about. And I think, to me, that's always stuck with me. And the one scene that always stuck with me was the scene about Christoph, or Gordon, running along the beach, feeling the essence of the stag. And to me, that was really what it's about. It's about energy. It's about, and that was the essence of Highlands of Me, because it's all about energy. It's all about, you know, quickening was energy. You know, the feeling of another immortal was energy. It's all about that. And I think that's what really interested me about the topic. And I actually remember sitting in a casting room after Highlander 2 came out, although the producers won't admit it actually existed. Because Highlander in space, they're like, what? No, there was Highlander in space. But I remember looking there going, I feel that I'm going to do something with this thing. Because I love the first movie. And I didn't know why at the time. And then 6 months later, I was actually in front of the casting people in a room, and I sat there and I said to them, you found your Highlander. I was the first person who walked in the room. They looked at me and went, you arrogant son of a, you know. I actually did say that to them. So you don't have to look anywhere else. Don't go anywhere else because you found the guy. And it took 3 months for them to make a decision based on New York and Los Angeles, London. They brought people in from everywhere. And ran a casting session, and finally went down to two. My agent at the time turned around to me and he said, it's been 3.5 weeks since you did the test between you and this other guy. They're probably not going to go with you. And so I'm going on vacation. So he left. And the next morning, you know, literally about 2 or 3 days later, I was in the gym and I was working out, and I was like, I was really bummed because I really wanted to do it. I really thought I was going to do this part. And I was on a treadmill working out, and I saw this Mercedes across, and I said, oh, look, dude, I need a break. No, I'd worked for, I think it was like 15 months I hadn't been working. Or I'd done small things. And I said, you know, I could afford something like that if I got this job. I know, you know, I really want to do this job. And I got home, and on the answering machine, my agent's assistant was like, Adrian, you're working on Monday. This was Friday. You're working on Monday. I'm like, you're going to Vancouver, drop your life, and go. So, literally, but luckily, Christoph Lambert came in the second. There's more people coming in. Wow, were they spreading it around the room? Like, oh, I can pause it somewhere over there. You know, but Christoph came in on the second, on the first show, and luckily we pushed a week, which allowed me a little bit of time to really work on character, work on some of the sword stuff we had, and, you know, and it launched from there. I'll answer questions now, since I've been babbling for the past 10 minutes. I'm sure some of you have, and it'll always do this. There won't be a question. Nobody will put their hand up for the first 30 seconds, 15 seconds. And then everybody back, oh, I lied. So you guys did that.
What was your most memorable moment on Highlander?
Getting the job. I mean, there were so many cool things I was able to do on that show. I mean, I directed 4 of the episodes. I worked some great people. I was very lucky. I can count on my one hand. I had probably 100-something actors that came into that show. And I can count on one hand people I didn't get on with. So I was very blessed in that respect. And I think you have to be, when you're working with everybody all the time, you've got new people coming in, there's going to be, not everybody sees eye to eye, you know. So, but I was very lucky. And so to me, that was something I think I remember. And, you know, Elizabeth Grayson, Peter Wingfield and Jim Burns and Stan Kirsch, you know, they're all great people. And so I have so many fond memories of it that I don't know if one specific is enough to explain it. I don't have the time. Yes, sir.
That was a time when Highlander came out that syndicated series had somewhat of a renaissance and great success. But with the fractionalization of media, do you see Highlander being able to survive or become a media property in today's fractional system?
I think it can, yeah. I can, because if you market, because I've been producing and directing and in that world and in the finance world for the past 6 years, and looking at the new media that's out there, looking at the way things are produced, if producers are smart, and a lot of them are, they will take a product and make sure that they can fractionalize it, that they can take it to the online portion of it, to a network like Starz or something that is a cable network, airlines, hotels. You can do that if you can fractionalize it. I mean, Highlander, in a sense, they were small stories every week, but they were based on one arc. So, I mean, if you're smart, there are so many different ways to do that. And somebody that now knows that fractionalization of the media will understand how to make that work. So I do believe it can. And I believe that the context is seems to be correct because, or everlasting, it's immortal. Everybody wants to live forever. Everybody wants to be beautiful. Everybody wants to stay young. Doesn't matter whether you're in from 1950 or 2010, that core thing about human people is going to last. It will never change. So Highlander, in a sense, the immortality aspect of it, and there are other shows. There was Immortal Beloved. There's another one just recently, Vampires. It's all about immortality. So I think that this premise can still work.
A lot of actors that play a good guy relish the opportunity to play a bad guy. So when you had your dark quickening episode, did you really think you're achieving that?
Yeah. You can do so much more being a bad guy, you know. You can sort of do things like, you know. It's a cool guy, you can't, you know. There's a different thing, it's a different morality. There's so many different things you can do, play with. The parameters of being a bad guy are much wider than they are being a good guy. So it's more fun, too, you know. It's the trouble is if you take it too far.
So, how was it working with Christopher Lambert?
Oh, Chris was such a gentleman when he first came in. I mean, Bob Anderson, who I worked with, who had worked with Chris before, Bob was the swordmaster. He passed away about 2 years ago. Great guy. And me and Christoph came in. It was like, it was so easy to work with him. You know, a lot of time you work with people and there's an attitude. There's a, I am a star. You know, Chris doesn't have that. Neither did Roger Daltrey. A lot of big stars don't have that. Some do. Some, you know, and you know, there's an issue to have with that. But Christoph, I never had that. I've always seen when I run into him, when we work together on funny. I said something funny. Highland Endgame. Saw that, right? by that point, I've had a lot more experience on sword work than Chris did. Chris is an actor, and as I originally went in there, I'm an actor. I'm not a martial artist. I just happen to be a martial artist as well. By the time we did Endgame, it was another, from 91 to, Endgame was in 2002, I think it was, something like that. It's 7-8 years of work I've done. And you imagine, you do something every day. You know, you've worked with so many different people. I had a lot more experience in the sword work. So now, the dynamic had changed by the time we worked on Endgame. I turned around and Chris was like, Adrian, I was his mentor on the show, and that was so weird. Like, after I'd seen Highlander, it's Christoph, oh wow, you know, now I'm kind of saying, yeah, Chris, you've got to move your hand back here, you've got to do this and do that. He'd come to me, not to the Swordmaster, after the show. That was kind of weird, but it was a mutual respect we had, so it was fun. See, I told you the hands would come, oh, I saw one in the corner. The question is, I have so many fights I've done, was there any time an injury, whether to make me immortal in real life? I don't know whether to actually make me immortal in real life was a thing, but I do wish, you know, the injuries didn't happen. I mean, I was injured, this finger, and I've told this, you guys brought it, this finger, not this one, this finger, was cut virtually every week. You know, I would be I had stitches about three times in the show, three or four times. One across the eye here, another one here. This one missed. I had a lot of things, you know, broken blades and stuff. So you kind of go, you have to have a certain respect. I always tell people, because I've started doing, in some conventions now, I've started doing sword demonstrations. And people can actually join in. I'm actually probably going to be doing one in October in Seattle. It's going to be a private for 50 people, basically a tutorial, if you like, on stage combat and how to use weapons, in a sense. So I always tell people, you've got to respect the weapon. You have to respect it. You know, it's funny because I was just walking through. Here, give me that weapon you got. It's not exactly what I'm used to. But imagine this being a bladed weapon. When you're walking around, this is not how you walk around with it. Because if I turn around like this, I'm going to catch somebody. You always have to keep a weapon like this if you walk around with it. Oh, see, there's a real one here. Doesn't work. But that's the fact is you have to respect the weapon. So when I was working on the show, doesn't work. When I was working on the show, we'd always, you know, try and make safety a priority. You have to make safety a priority because, you know, we're not immortal. Although some people kind of believe that you are, in a sense. But, so that's important, I think, to understand that, you know, because there are accidents happening even in the movies. So, next question.
Well, I just wanted to let you know that I got mine about 15 years ago at a convention in Denver, and I now keep it beside my bed because I am by myself now. My children have all left home. That is my one and only defense.
Your katana is under your bed?
No, next to my bed.
Next to your bed. Okay, do you know how to use it?
Well, I just think I'm probably going to use it any way I can.
Of course she can use it. She's Batgirl.
Is that old adage, isn't it? Did you see Crocodile Dundee? Yeah. You know where I'm going with this, right? That's not a knife. But, you know, I mean, if you have something, you've got to be able to pick it up and do something with it. I mean, again, something like that, that's a katana, is useful. Somebody sees you've got something in your hand, unless you know something, you be careful with how you go. I'm always not a proponent when I see things like Taibo and stuff like that, then people are like, oh, now I can go out and kick somebody's butt. I'm like, you've got to respect the fact that there are other people with other things in life, and you've got to know that use it and get out of it. It's not a question of trying to fight somebody. You've got to use it and get out of it, because there are people that will use other things against you, and then you'll be in more trouble. So,
you know. Well, I'm hoping it'll have the same effect as cocking a shotgun.
As cocking a shotgun?
Yes. I'm hoping that it will.
If I was walking down a dark room and I'd be like, no way.
Aren't you going to run?
Huh?
If you see a woman holding the sword, aren't you going to run?
If I see a woman holding a sword, aren't I going to run?
I don't know. I've seen Raiders of the Lost Ark. I don't think a sword's going to work once you get the gun out.
Next question. Can you get off this topic?
So, out of the number of wonderful guest stars that came on the show, were there any that you were just really thrilled to have there, or anyone that came back and, oh, this is great, any wonderful behind-the-scenes moments?
Roger Daltrey. I mean, Roger was such a joy to come, you know, he's, again, like I said, he became a friend of mine afterwards, and he was just so down to earth, you know. I was watching, it's so funny, because I was watching, I met the Divas, you see WWE, right? Yeah. You see WWE Divas? Well, you know, there's Paige, who is the, she's the one from England, she talks like this, you know, like, I don't care what I'm doing, and I don't care all this funny stuff. And there was an episode just recently where the Divas WWE went to England. And you've got the Bella Twins, who, you know, dress up, and they're very... And in England, it's a different culture. They're really split, in a sense. Most people don't have that, so it's kind of that down-to-earth thing. So I get where she's coming from, of wanting to be different, because Roger was like that. It's the kind of thing that was just a guy. Just that's how it was. So whenever I had Roger on the show, it was fun to be with personally, but it was also fun because he was so funny. And we had, I think I've told this story, you probably heard this story, so that's good. We had one episode, which was the Stone of Scoob, Scone, I think you say. And we were doing a flashback scene, and there's a cow in the back of the shop, you know, the director, Dennis Berry, he was nuts! Dennis used to talk to you like this! And he would do that. I'll tell you a story about Dennis in a minute. But there's a cow in the back of the shop, and me and Roger are doing our dialogue, and actor goes, and action. So, I mean, okay, car. All right, finally. Okay, take two. So, anyway. All right, take three. I'm not joking. Every single time we started the dialogue, this cow, nothing personal, started, you know, mooing. And so, I mean, that's on the outtakes. So a lot of little things like that was so much fun. So Roger was one of the fun ones I had to work with. Question?
I just started and I can't Aikido, and I know there's sword work involved with that, which kind of leads into this. Did you guys use a combination of Eastern and Western sword work, or was it just traditional Western?
When I first started working, I worked with Bob Anderson, as I mentioned. Bob was the head of the Olympic coaching team for England for fencing. So that's really this. Right? Whereas the katana is not as much, it's a different style. My training was in Hamdar Kung Fu, which had weapons, which was much more fluid. It's a totally different movement of form. So I said to my teacher, my sifu, what is a martial artist in a sense? And he said, well, think of a painter. A martial artist doesn't take from one thing. A painter doesn't paint with one color. He paints with several, and he makes that painting, that picture. Same thing with the sword work. If you notice, my sword work changed from season one to season six drastically, because much like I thought Duncan MacLeod would use it, it was different. When he fought somebody, he would use a different technique. So that's the one thing I can say with it. It was mixed between Korean, Japanese, European fencing, even the Spanish espadilla that we did. It's a totally different style, so it was all melded into one.
With the current trend of like the superhero genre kind of taking over cinema and on television, if you could play any character from a comic or any sort, what would you choose?
Ant-Man. Because he's funny. I've just seen the trailers of it. That looks funny, man. I don't have a sense of humor. It's kind of a fun thing to do. I don't know if I'd want to play. I mean, Batman is a great example.
But I don't talk like this. Hello, Christian Bale.
I don't know what one I would really like. I mean, Batman would be kind of fun. I think I'd like to do something original, in a sense. I mean, that was the same thing when we did Highlander. Being Connor McCloud wasn't frightening me, because everybody's seen it, everybody's identified with it. So if you do Batman, Spider-Man, anybody else, a lot of the time these days, the actor doesn't matter, it's just the franchise. But who's playing it? You guys look at the place and say, well, he was better than him. So you're going to be compared to somebody. If you create an original one, unless it's The Flash, you're going to have your stamp on it, and people will like it. You know, so I think that would be my take on it. I don't know.
Were there any interesting like improv moments that made it into the show?
Interesting improv moments. Oh gosh. Stan Kershaw always had. That's one of the. I think the most famous improv things we used to have, because we used to work between Paris and the U.S. When we shot in Paris, and the shows were put together for the European system and the American system, there was a difference because of the PAL and NTSC video difference, which meant there was 4 minutes, three and a half, 4 minutes difference between the European version and the English version, the American version. So what we would have to do when we would shoot for the Paris thing, we would have to shoot an extra scene. However, that extra scene wouldn't necessarily make it into the American version. So Stan Kirsch and I watched the Jerky Boys. Do you guys remember? No, Toffler, how are you doing, Betzel? Hey, little man, you know, this whole thing, and all the jokes they didn't. So Stan and I, there was a scene that would go like, so what do you think? Should we be doing this? And then we'd do this walk and talk. So it would usually be a walk and talk, but it would be a filler about 3 minutes. So you know, weird saying, hey, pencil neck, have you seen such and such? Because they're going to translate it. They won't know what we're saying. So we'd be putting this stuff in there that nobody would understand. But, you know, so stuff like that would go in. Improving all the time was pretty much what you would do, because, in a sense, there is a structure, but you do add a few things. But that one is probably the most blatant one that we ever had. Let's start talking.
What were some of your favorite set locations out of all the beautiful locations you got
to film? Set locations? Just outside of Paris, there was one place we actually shot constantly. It was a castle just outside of Paris, which I can't remember the name of it. But when I went to Bordeaux, that was really kind of fun. I mean, I actually directed it, so I have a certain favoritism towards it. But Bordeaux, We shot in a submarine silo, and this submarine silo was a real submarine silo. It was not used in, this was the thing. The French had built it.
Yeah, we do, because Germans are coming, we're going to build this submarine silo, we build the water this way.
And the Germans went, ah yeah, we're going to bomb some water, you go get the submarines out. And that's what happened, they bombed it, they never used the silo. Because they bombed the exits of the submarine base. So this submarine base had been, you know, it had been shot at, bombed, there were craters and holes in it. But the immensity of this place was enormous, and it was a beautiful shoot, but there was other things inside it. There was a metal factory inside it, a car repair place, there was a different thing. So to me it was kind of cool, because I was like kind of seeing old things transferred into new as well, so keeping the old. So that was one of my favorites, I could say.
Were you able to keep any of the souvenirs, like the sword or anything else from the show?
Yeah, I mean, I've got, you know, I actually have, I don't know if some of you have seen it, in some of the shots I had, I used to wear this jacket that was a Highlander jacket that has patches, season 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, nobody's got that jacket, it's my jacket. I keep that. I never bring it out, because, like, if I walk around, they're like, why are you wearing that? You're the Highlander. It's like me going like, hey, look, I can't wear the jacket, really, in a sense, but it's part of my memorabilia. It's one of the swords I do have. One or two swords. I have one sword that has a pewter handle that was gifted to me by the crew after season. I think it was 3 or 4. Beautiful pewter handle. I kept that one as well. So I've got a regular one and a pewter handle one. The rest of it was sold off for charity. A lot of the sets and stuff.
After the show wrapped, did you have problems being typecast for future acting gigs?
Yes. It's funny because I always said, "Nah, that will never happen." People do. People even say, why did you cut your hair? I'm like, it's been 10 years. Serious, I'm not joking. Why did you? I mean, I'm like, well, you know, it was a change in the show, but people remember that ponytail and that look. So, you know, casting agents, producers, studios, etc., typecasted me in that sense. And yes, it was hard. It did affect me. It still does to a degree. I mean, a little bit now, because things have changed a lot. It's been a while. You know, the interesting thing about women in martial arts, do you know that the staff was used by the Japanese women to beat an army? So, women in martial arts, you have to, this goes back to what I said earlier, when you're dealing with a situation, as a woman you're not necessarily as strong physically, but mentally you're way advanced. So, sorry guys. But there are certain things women can do that men have a harder time doing. And my thing is, when people used to say to me, what martial arts should I actually take? I'd say, it's like a painter. You've got to figure out which one it is and use it for you. It's like an acting teacher. Don't go to just one. Pick the one that you kind of think you might be able to do. But actually, if a Taekwondo guy says, I'm not going to advance you because of that, sorry, he's a jerk. Sorry, that to me is not, that's not helping you. He might have said to you, listen, perhaps we could utilize this. That means he has one thing and a very narrow view of what his art is. That doesn't work for me, personally. So.
Do you see the Highlander being rebooted, either in TV, Netflix, online, theater?
A new film, you mean?
New film or series?
Well, they have been trying to discuss something like that for about 4 or 5 years. And they've had different people, like Ryan Reynolds, attached to a film. It's supposed to be, it started off at a $70 million film, now it's supposed to be a $120 million film. That's a lot of money. And so, we used to do our shows for $1 million every week. And I think it reached a lot further of an audience. There is a market out there that I think they have to figure out how they're going to do it. Again, you never really know why a show goes on air. You never do. I got kicked out. There was a show I did way back in my early career called The Owl, which was a pilot for a series. It was supposed to go, but because at CBS, personalities changed, somebody else came in new, they went, no, I don't want to do that, we're going to do this. It was because of a person saying, it had nothing to do with the business. So there's so many different factors that make something work or not. that hasn't been taken into consideration. So again, I don't know when they're going to reboot it. They do have in mind to do it. They have a script. They had a director at one point. I think they have another one now. So again, I don't know, but it is in mind. Yes?
There is a reboot in your ass. Would you be willing to participate?
Yeah, I'd participate. You know, but you know, I'm not immortal. I'm getting older, you know, like, but they do want a young guy, you know. I mean, I can't do the Sean Connery part, you know, Sean. The funny thing is, you know, there's a Scotsman playing a Spaniard and a Frenchman playing a Highlander, which was kind of like. I'd do something if they did it. And they're trying to reboot the very first film. They rewrote the first film and some of the stuff in it that, you know, they've got a new package that they're trying to do, so I don't know what their structure is. Yeah, I'd do it. It'd be kind of fun to, you know, wink at people. Hey, I'm in the movie. Yes, sir.
At one point you were racing cars. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I still race cars on the street. People don't like that. I sat at these three guys. Go ahead, go faster! I'm like, okay, calm down. Your mother will kill me. I did a race down in Mexico called La Carrera Panamericana, which is a race from southern Mexico to the tips, a 7-day race. Highlander people had two cars in the race, one by a professional driver, because it's a dangerous race. You're doing 120, 150, 130 miles an hour down these little roads, etc., through the mountains and all this stuff, the type of stuff. And there were accidents, and people get injured, some get killed. They said to me, do you want to drive one of the cars? I'm like, yeah, I'd love to. I mean, that'd be great. So during my period on the show, they said to me, okay, you're going to fly from Vancouver to Los Angeles, to Mexico, not Guadalajara, it's one of the Cuernavaca, no. So now it's another Mexican place. And we're going to put you in this car, and we'll drive you up, you'll do a 1 day, drive up to Mexico City, and we'll film it, and you're going to, that's great, love to do that. So I leave from Vancouver, and I have my dog, my Rottweiler, with me, and I had to drop him off in LA. Well, I for some reason, I can't remember what it was either, they didn't want the dog to come on flight. I missed the flight. So then I missed my connection in Los Angeles. So by the time, I'm now calling them in Mexico saying, I'm not going to make the connection. So they go, okay. Get to Los Angeles, we'll figure it out. So I get to Los Angeles, I call them again. They said, okay, you're going to fly into Mexico City. We're going to fly you on a small plane from there to the place. And I'm like, a small plane? How small? You know, like a Cessna, that wasn't exactly my favorite, you know, thing to do. So no, be cool, it's good. So I get to Mexico City. Now, this is like, I think this was like 10, 12, 13 hours later. Mexico City, they drive me out of the city for an hour and they take me to this private airfield. And it's all the jets and stuff. The very rich people have all these jets. And I'm sitting there going, wow, score, I'm going to get the jet. Cool. And I walk out, walk into the terminal, it's a small terminal, not very big, from right here to the wall. And outside the wall there, outside the door there, I see this big jet. I'm like, yeah. That's how I was. So I'm walking through the terminal and I get to the doors and I'm following the door and I get to the doors and I'm like, an E-Bolt's left. And I'm like, okay, so I follow. And I follow around the corner and there's a little Cessna sitting on the And I'm like, oh no. And I'm watching lightning happen in the distance. So I'm like, yeah. So I got on board and I literally said, well, I mean, you know, my time is my time whenever it is. So I'll get in the back of this thing. And I remember looking up like this, watching the stars go by. At the corner, I'm seeing flash. I'm like, it's pretty. And we got there, okay. But by the time I got there the next morning, they'd driven the first leg of the race and they'd blown the engine. Because the engine, because the additives in the fuel down there weren't enough to fuel a high-powered engine, so they'd blown it. So we had to take the engine out, and I'm kind of leaning over, trying to, you know, this camera's a film. Yeah, you should, yeah, I agree, you should be doing it. I had no idea what I was doing. You know? yeah, take the thing out. That's good. and then I drove later that afternoon. We got the car and I drove. And I was in a small Jag, 1952, 1954 Jag, which had dry weather tires, about this big. You know, they're not big tires. And the windshield was this wide, like this. It was open top, so we had helmets. So my co-driver, who was the driver driven the night before, he sat with me. So I drove the leg. So we get halfway there, and it starts raining. And it's raining, raining. We get onto the, and at this time, we've got a car kind of following us. And we get onto the highway going up to Mexico City. And the highway's there at the time, I don't know if they changed now, but at the time, there's just a lot of holes and stuff. So water's collected, it's now raining, you know. And the windshield wipers are this big, through this. It didn't really matter because, you know, actually when you're in a high-speed car, like for instance when we did the Daytona 500, the Rolex race, they said, you know, the wipers went out of the car, but you're going so fast that the water's coming up, you can still see through it because it's got so fast. So this thing not doing very much. So we get on the highway, and now the hot car is hydroplaning because it's dry where the tires on it, and you've got little pools of water in there. As I'm doing this, I drop it down to about 70, about 70, 75. And all of a sudden, this coach or bus comes past me, like, and it hits a puddle of water. This whole sheet of water goes right on top of us.
Oh.
That's my experience of the car. I had it in a Pan American. I got wet when I arrived back in Mexico City, but I had fun, you know. It's good. Next question. Yes. Well, you actually just mentioned one who I worked with twice. Once on Beauty and the Beast, and once on his audiobooks, which is George R.R. Martin. And he has another property that actually we were trying to option that is now in litigation because something happened to it. And that's why I say you just don't know when a thing is being made. But this series of books is actually, I'm not going to mention what it is, but he would be something, because what I like about him is something that we used to do in Highland. You never know what's going to happen. There's so many characters. When I did his book, audio books, his characters were, it was about these different planets and different cultures and one trapping another and these, I don't know where his mind is. It's amazing, his mind. But he takes you on a journey. I remember Game of Thrones is one of my favorite shows. I watch it religiously. And you watch a character and the character is a main character and he dies. And you're like, oh my God, they died, you know. And my wife said, well, maybe they actually didn't know it. I said, well, it's in the book, you know. but I like that. I like the fact, because you don't know what's going to happen. I'll take that. You don't know what's going to happen. And we did that in Highlander. When we killed Tessa, you didn't expect it to happen. And we killed Richie. You didn't expect it to happen. And there are a lot of people that deny it actually happened. But, you know, you don't know. And as an audience member, sometimes it turns a couple of people off, but it makes more people much more interested in the show because, oh my gosh, what's going to happen next week? You want to watch, even though you don't want to. You want to watch. You know what I mean? You have to. So that type of writer. Anybody else? I'm not sure. A lot of books are being optioned to be made into projects now because there's an audience behind it, which goes back to what you were saying earlier on about the fragmentation of media now. They'll take that so that they can actually market it. They know that there is a certain audience they'll take. They might turn it into a comic book or something else at the time, and that's another part of that fragmentation, which now today is different than when we were doing Highland.
I'm sure that you have your list of people that you're a fan of. Who are they, and have you had a chance to work with them yet?
Again, there's different levels because certain times they put you in different things for a reason. You know, you're an actor of an A, B, C, D, E list, whatever. That list changes as your popularity comes on, so then you get the chance to work for different people based on that. So, I mean, I've worked with some good people. I'd love to work with Sean Connery. I don't think he's ever going to work again. You know, I mean, he's doing his thing now. I think he's done. There's a lot of good actors today, some I don't even know of, because, you know, it's a different era. Now you've got the 20-year-olds, the 22-year-olds, the 25-year-olds. I'm like, I don't know. But I watch shows now as a director, as a producer, and I try to look to actors and say, I'd like to work with them as a director, as a producer. As an actor, I don't know. if obviously the Pacinos and the De Niros were my time, and but that's a different era now. And I think I would have loved to have worked with some of them. I've met most of them. I met Clint Eastwood. I've met, you know, Pacino. I've met Sharon Stone. I've met, you know, a lot of these people. Never worked with them. I'd like to have done, you know, to a point, but I never had, you know. But I get to work with people, different people. What's his name? Who I just worked with on a line of film last year, the Secret of Emily Blair, was he's an Irishman. He was in Star Trek too. Gosh,
Simon Pegg.
Say it. No, not Simon Pegg. Simon would be fun to work with. I think he's funny. I think he's a funny actor. And that kind of, you know, there's some good English actors coming out. And then again, I'd love to work with Judi Dench or, you know, some of those English actors as well, because I think there's a great quality out of the English. Next question. Yes, madam.
When Highlander went back in time, the Scottish accent would get thicker. So how did you get into that?
Okay, let's talk about the Scottish accent. When I was a kid, you know, in England, you have a lot of different cultures that are in your face because you're much tighter. You've got the Scottish, the Welsh, the Irish, you know, the Jamaicans. So we'd be having fun telling jokes. I would always love to do the accent. So I'd always do a Scottish accent because that's kind of what the Scots would do, you know. So when they did Highland, I'm like, clean, I could do my Scottish accent. But if I talk like this, you know, they didn't like it because they said the American audience wouldn't understand it. In show 17, 16, 17, when I was doing The Return of Amanda, I had the producer call me up and say, you got to cut the accent out. I said, no. She went, I'm the producer. I said, look, I know you are, but this is the issue. The issue is we've done 17 shows already with this accent stuck in there. She said, but the American audience won't understand it. I said, so I'm going to get Bill Paxton to call you. So I thought about this, and this is something I had to understand. The fact is, when you... I didn't do it out of ego. It was because I truly believe this character is called the Highlander from Scotland.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have an American accent in 1785. So, or an English-sized, whatever I had, you know. So I said to him, I said, look, I tried doing him without this accent, and it doesn't, I don't know who he is. And that's the truth. When you create character, you create different things. You create who his objective is, what their obstacles are, who their loves are, what their history is, how they walk, how they talk, you do that. So when you do that, you take a piece out of it, you're like, it's kind of hobbly. So after I said to Bill, I said, look, I really don't understand where this has gone. He said, well, I said, I can do it with that, but he said, well, all right, let's just see. Maybe there's a way to do this. And so what we decided on was that 1815, when Duncan MacLeod came to America, I would then have an American accent. Well, I changed it to about 1850 because I didn't believe that an accent would change over like overnight. So my accent changed. If you look at it, it was lighter as later episodes came. In year two, it was a slightly lighter accent. But then the funny thing was, when people came out, they had a survey, they went, we love the Scottish accent. People loved it, because there's a history behind it. So that's the story behind that. Next question? Yeah, I think we will do. We're running out, so how long do we have? Ten off, what, 10 minutes? This is the fun part of my Q&A's. Okay, so you've all seen sword fights, right? You've all seen quickenings. People haven't asked me about quickenings. Are there any kids in the room? Have we got kids in the room? How old are you?
14.
14, okay, you're okay. How old are you? 10. Okay, I won't say that. Exactly. See, there's a quickening happening over there. See, ladies doing a quickening over there. This. People always ask me, which none of you have asked me, what's your motivation for a quickening?
What's your motivation for a quickening?
So, basically, I said it's much like an experience.
All right.
right. Well, thank you once again for joining me here in Neverland for the Neverland Podcast. Next week, like I said, I will be in TuneFest, and I will try to process as much audio and get it all together for you to share with you as much as I can next week. It's going to be great. You're going to love it. It's always I always have a great time there in TuneFest. And if you are planning to go through Marceline, Missouri, if you're going to TuneFest, come and find me. I'll be wearing a shirt that says Neverland Podcast, so you should be able to find me. I think my wife is going to be joining me as well. She might be busy grading some papers. But yeah, come find me out there on the streets. I'll be probably in the museum. I'm going to visit with Peter Whitehead, who you heard last week, and meet him face-to-face. I'm going to have a good time. It's a lot of fun. I encourage you to go if you've never been. But until next week, God bless, and remember to keep a pixie in your pocket.
Thank you for listening to the Neverland Podcast. Please subscribe and rate the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Blueberry. We love to hear from you on twitter.com/neverlandpcast and facebook.com/neverlandpodcast. Leave us a voicemail at 816-226-6492 and send email to podcast@neverlandpodcast.com. Join us next week and we'll once again go to Disney and beyond. The Neverland Podcast is copyright Blue Band Productions and all original content belongs to the same. Other content is copyright of their respective creators and is used under Creative Commons license.
Good night, Neverland!
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.